Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Good morning, and welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. I'm fired up. It's a big day in the sports world. It's been a big week in the sports world, and I'm happy to have you joining us on this Father's Day weekend. I know it's just a day, but why not call it a weekend? Because we're actually not going to be here tomorrow. So we'll celebrate it today. I'm fired up. I got a chance to celebrate a little bit yesterday as I was at the U.S. Open in Shinnecock Hills. Good times were had. We'll get into that in a moment. There's a lot for us to talk about today. We obviously will talk about fantasy sports related items when it comes to the Cowboys, which we'll do in hour number two. We're talking baseball in hour number three, but hour one, we're going to have a lot of fun with some of the major storylines in sports, and they are plentiful this particular weekend. Sometimes after the NBA is over, you get a little bit of a lull. There's not quite as much juice, it feels like, because the NFL is in a little bit of a mini camp leading to hiatus, and MLB trudges along. I love it, but not everybody is as energized by baseball on a day-to-day basis. So we're lucky to have a couple of major events that coincide this weekend in the U.S. Open and the World Cup. So, Kev, first of all, good morning.
Good morning to you.
And I know you're fired up about some of these storylines as well. We're going to talk Kawhi Leonard, which added a little bit of juice to the NBA as well. So lots of different storylines. Which of the three, U.S. Open, Kawhi Leonard, and World Cup, are you most fired up about?
Oh, boy. The Kawhi stuff is kind of just, it's right in my wheelhouse. I get to start trying then to map out all 29 teams are going to try to go after him, even though there's probably only maybe six or seven that have a chance. There's draft implications on it, right? So that's one of my favorite things kind of with the NBA and the player movement is one move. It's never one for one. There's always a trickle-down effect where at least about half the league is going to be impacted by this one decision. The World Cup's also been fantastic.
Yeah, so I love all that kind of stuff, and we will get to all of it. We'll do Kawhi a little bit later this hour. We'll do World Cup probably start of the second hour. We're also going to do a little bit of NBA draft, just take a brief look at that. We're going to have some NBA draft experts on as the week goes on and into next week. When is the draft exactly? What day?
Thursday.
This upcoming Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we'll take a quick look there. We'll also, next weekend, we'll get an NBA draft expert on to kind of recap what has gone on, and so have some fun with that. But we'll start with sort of my day. So I was there at the U.S. Open. I always like to tell people when I go to an event like that how it was, what it was like, and all that kind of stuff. I had a chance to go to the Final Four at the end of March, and I think we had some fun with that. But yesterday was U.S. Open, and there's been lots of stories you may have heard, for those of you watching it, about the traffic and trying to get out there. It's very real. It is as real as it gets. We stayed a little bit further out in Long Island, not far from where you pick up the courtesy bus. The North Fork of Long Island is where we were staying. The Hamptons is on the South Fork of Long Island. A little geography lesson. Imagine Long Island is shaped like a whale. Towards the mouth is Queens and Brooklyn, and then you move a little bit further out, and it's Nassau County, and then it's Suffolk County, and then towards the very end of Suffolk County, you have the North Fork of Long Island, where the wineries are and where I was staying, and the South Fork, which is the Hamptons, leading out all the way to the very end of Montauk. It is a very long island. It is aptly named. It's about 125 miles long. So there's your geography lesson. But reality is, I've been reading all about the traffic and how we were going to combat it. We had to come up with a strategy, but at the end of the day, you really just kind of had to head into the lion's den. So we got over to the airport, the courtesy airport, with no problem whatsoever, and then jumped on the courtesy bus. That courtesy bus is 13 miles, give or take, one, from Shinnecock Hills Golf Course, and they drop you off right up the course. That took 90 minutes solid, 13 miles. It was pure gridlock. Those coastal towns out in the Hamptons are famous, and they're fancy, but they are not big. So when you have a lot of traffic leading up to it, it creates many, many problems, and it did yesterday. I felt bad, frankly, for a lot of the people who kind of work out there on some of these big homes or in the restaurants and shops and all that kind of stuff. They couldn't do anything about it. They are just going straight when the courtesy buses and everybody else with possibly premier parking drives right up to basically West Hampton and then turns off, and that's what happened. But, yeah, 90 minutes to go 13 miles. It was not fun.
I was hearing some stuff about that there was worries that certain golfers could be missing their actual tee times and things like
that,
too.
There were issues, apparently. Depended on where they were staying, there's all kinds of issues, and you couldn't really do anything about it. It's one road in. Sunrise Highway, it just leads right into and through the Hamptons and through West Hampton and Hampton Bays and Southampton and East Hampton and all the way out towards Montauk and the other towns out there. So, unfortunately, you had to deal with it. I woke up at 5:15 yesterday. We were on the road at 6. We got to the course at 8 o'clock, so we basically got over to the parking lot at 6:20, walked over to the courtesy bus, on there at 6:30 it leaves. We got there right at 8. I was looking at it specifically so I could retell this story, and that's basically the time, give or take a few minutes maybe, but that was what the experience was like. So we get there, and I looked at weather reports all week, 72 degrees and sunny. So it said all week. All three. I went with my father-in-law and my brother-in-law. It was like a Father's Day sort of outing. And my dad, it's not his thing. He's not going to do it. He's not going to walk a golf course all day. He's not into it. He's a little on the older side, too. So I just don't think he could hack it. And I'm glad he didn't come, because he would have been in rough shape. So I'm not glad he didn't come, but for his sake, I'm glad he didn't go, because I think he would have had a tough time with it. But we get there and it is not warm. I understand it's early in the day, but it does not feel like it's going to be a warm day. And it was probably closer to 60 degrees, and I'm wearing a golf shirt and shorts and sneakers. That's my apparel for the day. Sunglasses, hat, you know, the standard sort of golfer outfit, the casual golfer outfit, not professional golfer outfit. But so that's the deal. I get there and it's cold. I wanted to go to the merchandise tent. People I was with said, nah, let's just start walking around the course, which ended up in retrospect not being a great idea. But the problem is that it went from being overcast and a little cool is a nice way of saying it, to raining. It started misting, and then it got into a full rain. So there was a good hour there where most people were dressed sort of like me. Everybody was freezing because nobody had sweatshirts or pullovers or any of that kind of stuff. I should have brought one, but I just wasn't prepared because I had checked the weather all week. And we were cold. It was just that kind of deal. And we had to suck it up. And there was enough rain on me, I had to sort of like push the water off of my arms and hat and all that kind of stuff. But the good news is about 11:30, it stopped and the sun came out. And I remember looking at my watch and it was just shy of noon and it was beautiful out. It was still a little windy and the players were having to deal with that. But that was the weather setup. As far as players that we saw, I think we did a pretty good job of getting ahead of the crowds a little bit so we could be in a spot to see some of the big groups. And there was a monster group in the morning that had to deal with that weather, which is what was so impressive about what Dustin Johnson did. because he was dealing with that bad weather in the morning. At one point, it was full raining, and it was windy, and he was scoring. I mean, he scored three under yesterday. He's four under on the tournament, and he hit the shot of the day yesterday, which we were at. It was on hole number seven, and he did not hit a great approach. It's a par three hole, so he was probably 35 feet out, and it was an extremely difficult putt, and he bombed it. He nailed it. Place went crazy. I couldn't believe he hit the shot. But he did, and he earned every bit of the lead to this point. All the stats lead in his direction to winning this tournament, and that's where we're at. So that grouping, to back up a second, that grouping was Dustin Johnson, Tiger Woods, and Justin Thomas. So you had thousands of people following their every shot. And we just parked in places where we figured they'd come to us, you know, watch a couple of groups beforehand. That, I find, is the better way to do it. I don't like following around necessarily those guys shot by shot because you don't know exactly if you can see it as well or not. But we were set up. And then we had a really good groups in the afternoon. Rory McIlroy was playing with, I think, Phil Mickelson. We saw Ricky Fowler and his new fiance, which was a highlight as well. But in any event, that was the deal. It warmed up around 12 o'clock, got much better in the afternoon. We stayed till about 3 and then hightailed it out of there because it was starting to get cloudy again. And we had been up since 5:15. We had a full day. We saw a whole bunch of groups. It's a good time. It's my second time going to a major golf tournament. The last time was the 2004 U.S. Open at that very same course. I would like to go more. I probably will go to some more, but it's a fun day. I think you do it one day. If people go for the whole weekend and walk the course the whole weekend, I don't know if I'm into that, but I would recommend it. It's not a cheap ticket, but I would recommend it because I had fun, and especially if the day is nice out. You go have a couple of beers and watch the golfers. It's fun. So there you go. That's my story. If you have any questions, Kevin, now's the time.
I've got a few. Was this the first time you saw Tiger? Because I was going to say, did you happen to see Tiger? Answer, yes. The atmosphere. Yes. But, and was this the first time you saw him?
I'm trying to think back to the 2004 U.S. Open, which was at Shinnecock. It was the last time it was there. And it was became known for a controversial hole, which ironically is the hole that Dustin Johnson hit his huge birdie putt at yesterday. The seventh hole back in 2004 had been set up so difficult and the weather was hot and dry that nobody could keep the ball on the seventh green. So there were numerous three putts by these professional golfers. They were openly complaining about the setup, about the USGA, and it became a thing to the point where a full circle moment happened for me yesterday. Back in 04, I was set up at that seventh green, same as I was yesterday. It's probably in a slightly different location, but basically same deal. 14 years almost to the day. That hole was so difficult then, nobody could keep the ball on the green. It angered Pat Perez so much that he came up, he had a makeable, what would normally be a makeable putt, and he three-putted it, and he chucked his club. He fired it in the way that I would do it, and any amateur golfer that's irritated would do it. He fired it at his bag from across the green, probably chucked the thing 20 yards, and people booed him. It's a golf tournament, and you know, look, I thought it was funny personally, but you know how golfers are, and even amateur golfers, they booed him. They didn't like it. They thought he was being a brat. He was obviously ticked off because the green was impossibly difficult, literally. For professional golfers to be three putting it all day long, it's probably too hard, to the point where they had to start watering it after each grouping on Sunday because it got out of control. So yesterday, I'm on that seventh hole. Pat Perez hits a nice approach shot. Boom. Birdie. It was like a full circle moment, and the place went crazy. He pumped his fists, and Pat Perez is sort of known as like a golfer of the people. He's the guy that'll hang out, talk to fans, have a beer with you, that kind of guy. So to see him hit that birdie putt, it brought all those memories flooding back. I remember it very vividly from 14 years ago and to yesterday. So that was kind of fun. And I'm trying to think, I was there on Saturday back in 04. I'm trying to think, my memory isn't vivid of Tiger if he was there. If he played, I know I saw him. I very vividly remember Phil Mickelson was playing with Vijay Singh back then, and Phil was in the lead, and it was a tournament that he kind of gagged away. He was in the lead on the 17th hole on Sunday and, like, bogeyed and lost the tournament to Retief Goosen by a stroke or two because he kind of fell apart in those last couple of holes. So I said, why don't we keep talking about it after the break? Because I'm sure you have a couple of more questions, and I'll give you a sense of what it's like and everything else. But so, yeah, I think I definitely saw Tiger yesterday. He wasn't playing well. He obviously missed the cut. So that was kind of a bummer. But people are still enamored with him, just as they were 15 years ago.
Yeah, I want to kind of just ask about that whole thing, because for at least people my age, our whole lives, we've either known golf with the red shirt or when what golf looks like without the red shirt. So I have a question about that.
Yeah, no doubt. So we'll come back. We'll keep talking about the U.S. Open. We'll get into the Kawhi Leonard stuff as well. It's Mike and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Today. We're here for the next 3 hours on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
On Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us this morning. We have, however you found us, obviously whether it's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app or TuneIn Radio or iHeartRadio or a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country, thank you. Appreciate you joining us. Hope you're having a good Saturday and a good Father's Day weekend. If you want to reach out to us today, please do so on Twitter. At FNTSY Radio, I'm at Mike Blewett. That's B-L-E-W-I-T-T. And Kevin is at The Kevin Walsh. And if you wanted to give us a call, talk about anything you want in the sports world, 844-843-6879. That's 844-FNTSY. So before we get back to story time, there was a goal, by the way, in the Argentina-Iceland match. So they're up 1-0 in the 23rd minute right now as I'm watching. Before we get to back to U.S. Open, if you want a chance to win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game, just go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. There you'll find a link to a free DFS baseball contest every day. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancers. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. And while 30% of the patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, nearly 14,000 people each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. Find out how you can help and play in free DFS contests with a shot at winning two tickets to a 2018 World Series game. Go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. So you asked me about the Tiger thing. Yes, people are still following him. I guess the one thing that I can't, and I think I've been around sports long enough to say that it was about Tiger. But the one thing that added to it is that the grouping, he was with Dustin Johnson, who's winning the tournament and was playing great yesterday, and Justin Thomas, who's another guy who's a top American golfer. So that was a, I think if Tiger wasn't there, that would have been the biggest following. And Iceland just tied it up. So there we go. That's awesome. We're gonna talk about it definitely in the second hour.
Fantastic.
Are they taking that away, or is there a yellow card there? No.
This is the, I guess it,
I gotta turn myself to so I can watch and talk at the same time. But honestly, if I do that, I'll get distracted during the show. So
it'll be 3 hours of us being silent watching.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the only thing I can't tell, Kev, is if how big that grouping would have been if Tiger wasn't there. I still think they have the biggest following of the morning. I just don't think it's as intense. Because when you see them, so we were positioned in a way that they were coming towards us, and you see them coming over a hill and like walking down after a tee shot, it is just thousands of people walking along with them. Just a weird Pied Piper situation. It's funny to watch. And you just, that's why I walk a couple of holes ahead. I don't have to see them hit every shot. It was just kind of fun to be out there. So, but it's good, you know, because the U.S. Open app works pretty well. You can find out where guys are. You can go by location, and they let you have your phone in that tournament. I know Masters and other tournaments, they just tell you to get rid of them. As long as yours is on silent, though, they're good to go. You can take some pictures when they allow it, and you can just be ready to go whenever somebody's coming by, because you can pinpoint it by location and where you are. So that's kind of fun. A lot of technology involved now, and to see the amount of cameras and all this kind of stuff, how it works, is, I think it's fun. The logistics of running a golf tournament have to be the most difficult of the sporting events, because there's so much mobile equipment going on. The course, the field of play isn't stationary. You have to track the ball. You have to follow the players' angles, all this kind of stuff. To do it is pretty impressive. Not to mention all the people that are involved with crowd control and everything else. And scoring, all that kind of stuff has to be, they have to be on it. So it can't make mistakes, especially in the scoreboard, because the players are looking at it too. So I think that, you know, that was kind of fun. Look, I got to see everybody I wanted to see. I didn't see Ian Poulter yesterday, and I know he gagged it down the stretch yesterday, as did, unfortunately, Jordan Spieth, who we saw. I think Spieth was with Rory yesterday. I don't want to get my groups confused, but yeah, Spieth, I think, was with Rory yesterday, so that was kind of a good grouping to be around. But I didn't see Brooks Koepka, who made a good run yesterday, and I didn't see Poulter. They did a staggered start, so while we were following some of the other groups, we didn't get to see the other guys come through. So as far as the tournament is concerned, Dustin Johnson with a 4-stroke lead right now, and here's some stats for you to digest, Kevin. The past four U.S. Opens have played out this way. If you have the lead or a piece of it over the past 4 years, you win. Last year, Brooks Koepka was tied for the lead after 36. He won. 2 years ago, it was Dustin Johnson. He was in first after 36 holes. He won that one. 3 years ago, Jordan Spieth at Chambers Bay was tied for the lead. He won that one. And 4 years ago, Martin Kaymer, who I saw yesterday and was playing, I think, at plus 14 at the time, he was in the lead after 36 holes, and he won that. Additionally, if you're at least 2 under and the only player in the field in red numbers after 36 holes, you win. This has last happened in 1978 when Andy North did it. He won the tournament. Previously, Tony Jacklin won the U.S. Open in 1970, and Gary Player won the Open Championship in 1974. And the last one, if you're up 4 shots at the U.S. Open, which he is, after 36 holes, you win. Unless, we all famously remember Tom McNamara blowing the lead in 1909, many, many years before either of us were born. So Kaymer, McIlroy, Woods, Willie Anderson in 1903, Jim Barnes in 1921, and Jim McNamara is the only one to lose. But Tiger, Rory, and Martin Kaymer in fairly recent history have won while being up at least 4 strokes. They all had 6-shot leads and held on to it through the weekend. So there you go. That's I think DJ is in great position. Brooks Koepka really put the heat on yesterday by playing a good round. Now, that being said, he's still 5 strokes off the lead. Scott Piercy and Charlie Hoffman are at even. Tommy Fleetwood, who I saw yesterday, and he played the low round of the day along with Koepka, he is at plus one, as is Henrik Stenson at plus one. Justin Rose also at plus one, but again, they're 5 strokes off the lead. It's not, look, this thing can turn around in an instant, because that course is so difficult. We watch triple bogeys, double bogeys. If you're at home in person, doesn't matter. We saw that course really humble a lot of people yesterday, and guys like Jordan Spieth and others. So that's the deal. It was fun. Yeah, and I would highly recommend going to it. It's not cheap, but it's a fun thing to do if you, even if you only do it one time.
I'm staying home with Mr. Blewett.
You are? You like to watch it all? And
I think I just can't imagine that would be the scene for me.
You don't think it would be fun?
I the fact that a guy chucked a golf club and it wasn't consensus joy and it was actually people booing doesn't sound awesome. Like my crowd.
I loved it. Well, that's what made it even more fun, because I was like one of the subversive people that was like, yeah, Pat Perez, and like all the snooty golf guys, they don't want me there, but I'm there. So what are they going to do? Crushing a Stella yesterday in their face. It was fun. It was good times. I do think it's fun. I would not go on a Sunday if you're really into it. I wouldn't go on a Sunday because you obviously can't see everything that's going on. You're just missing stuff. I'm there on a Friday. I'm watching the leader. I'm tracking. It's easier to do now, obviously, with your phone. You have an app, but you're not watching every shot. There's places where you could post up in front of a video board and watch, but what the hell are you doing that for? Just go home and watch on TV. So that's the deal. It was a good time. Maybe you and I go once. We don't have to go to a major. We go to a different tournament, and there's less crowds and all that stuff to deal with, and you can have fun. They do smaller tournaments in this area, Jersey and Westchester and Long Island. So we'll do it, me and you. Today.
We'll look into it.
So anyway, yeah, so there you go. So that's it. Dustin Johnson, you know, odds are in his favor, but I'm telling you, that course is so difficult. By the way, there's no trees. It's like a links course, so there's no trees. It's just – there's no water. It's just – sand and extremely difficult greens and unplayable rough. You have to keep it in the fairway. I was literally walking through past some of it yesterday. I was like, what would you do, especially if you're a hack golfer, like somebody like me? Like, I don't even play much, so I don't even call myself a golfer. But if you're a hack golfer, I don't even know what you would do, because the rough is, it's not rough. It's like, it's thick fescue, like weeds. It's just unplayable. You have to take, you can't hit your ball while it's in there. So I don't know what to do. But some of the professional golfers, guys that are plus 13, plus 14, I'm sure they had to figure it out over the weekend. So Sergio Garcia, he was another guy that missed the cut. Just thinking of guys that put up just miserable scores. I mean, Martin Keimer won the U.S. Open 4 years ago. That's not an eternity. It's not like his career is over. And he was playing at a plus 14 when I saw him yesterday. That's humbling. So anyway, so there you go. That's it. That's it for the golf. We're still at 1-1 in the match, 33rd minute there in the World Cup match, Argentina and Iceland. We're going to talk about that at the top of the next hour. This may be out of halftime by that, probably still in halftime at that point, so we can talk about it a little bit. And all the goings on yesterday, Cristiano Ronaldo, obviously, and some of the other big stories. But well, let's transition it over to the NBA. We'll take probably this next half an hour to talk about it. But obviously the big story is Kawhi Leonard. I got that as I was on the course yesterday. I got an alert and saw the Kawhi Leonard news. I can't say it's expected, but nobody was. It's such a huge story that when you see it in black and white, you're like, oh my God, this is actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
So according to Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN, so far, San Antonio's Kawhi Leonard has Los Angeles, preferably the Lakers, at the center of its preferences for a trade destination, league sources told him. And so far, he's expressed nothing directly to the Spurs about his future. It's probably his people communicating it, which is, I think, indicative of the real problem here. Leonard has expressed nothing to them directly about his future. The Lakers and the Clippers interest Leonard, and both teams would move quickly to assemble packages to acquire Leonard. The Spurs won't rush. Leonard and his camp had shown interest in the $219 million Supermax deal, which is an important statistic, and then I'll hand it to you. But if he signs with the Spurs now, he gets effectively a five-year extension for $219 million, $43 million average plus. If he waits until after this upcoming season, he can sign with the Spurs 4 years, $188 million. If he just goes and plays out the season and says, I'm unrestricted, I can do whatever I want, it's 4 years, $139 million. Not chump change, but the previous number is $188 million, and the one before that is $219 million. So he could be a guy that's sticking to his guns and saying, you know what, it's not about the money. I'm really unhappy here. I don't trust the Spurs, and I just want out. I don't care if I leave, which is a crazy thing to say, $80 million on the table. But anyway, that's the deal. That's how I'll set it up to you, and I'll let you comment.
Well, I think at some point in the midst of the free agency, we do need to have a discussion about the problems facing the NBA and players leaving the table, because, and we'll see what LeBron does and Paul George and things of that nature, and if they leave money or if they don't leave money on the table. Because this is kind of one of the problems where, and this is something new for the Spurs, but they're going to lose him in part because it's already been reported. He's not worried about the money, probably because saying leaving $80 million on the table for most people is one of the craziest things that you've ever heard. But when the total figures amount to 150 plus million regardless, plus all of the outside stuff, it's easier, I guess, to swallow, it, to be in a happier situation. I also do think one of the things that's probably underlooked at in this, and again, we'll get to where Kawhi could go. I just want to do it service and how crazy this is for the San Antonio Spurs, and kind of just for, in the last 20 years, the Patriots and the Spurs have been the model franchise. Not that they've come without controversy, at least on the New England side, but the level of consistency and winning and dominance for two decades is truly unprecedented stuff that they've done. And you see it kind of starting to slip away a little bit in New England, but yeah. Maybe there aren't enough people there that can take advantage of it. There's plenty of people in the Western, in the NBA, that are going to be able to take advantage of things of this nature now, to where the Spurs might have to do some type of reset. But we've already have the report, and that's, I wouldn't say as important, but it's close, that Pop's probably done after the 2020 season. He's going to coach with the Olympics, and then he hangs it up. So this whole Spurs thing is kind of going in a direction where I don't even know what the return that they're looking for. I saw someone the other day mention it was something I kind of looked past as well, but what do they do with LaMarcus Aldridge? Like, does this become a scenario where they're all in for future assets and they kind of reset the deck? Or is this a scenario where they're going to want more ready-to-play guys and continue to be as competitive as they've been? 21 straight years, I believe it is, they've been in the playoffs. So it is one of those things that I do think it is kind of underlooked at, again, because it is so exciting to figure out where Kawhi is going to go, and we'll get into that. But the fact that this kind of Spurs thing now does seem like it is going to be looked at in a much different way.
So you brought up LaMarcus Aldridge, which I think is an interesting part of this, but for a different reason. I'm not suggesting that what you said isn't interesting, but also at the beginning of the year, and Popovich, who rarely dishes on this kind of stuff, or he even came out and said that it was eye-opening to him. LaMarcus Aldridge, a year ago, asked for a trade out of San Antonio. He was uncomfortable with the way he was being used. And Popovich said it was an eye-opener for him because he thought things were fine. They just had to get a little bit better of getting LaMarcus instituted into their system and all this kind of stuff. But he was uncomfortable. This is another instance of this player being uncomfortable. Now, it's a far more serious accusation in that he felt like they mishandled his injury. But that being said, it was another instance. Now, LaMarcus Aldridge seems to have acclimated better after he aired his grievances and they started using him a little bit more the way he wanted to be used. And that's a tough give or take, to your point earlier about the NBA having difficulty with players having so much power and so much money. Now, I would disagree with you on the $80 million. I would love to hear of another story where somebody willfully left $80 million on the table. That's a huge number, especially for somebody.
He's about to do it.
For anybody. But Kawhi, that's a lot of money for him. I mean, his net assets aren't $1 billion. Like, that is a significant chunk of change. So let's talk a little bit more about Kawhi when we come back. We'll wrap the LaMarcus Aldridge thing into it and talk about potential destinations for him. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back on FST, Mike Luda, Kevin Walsh. Thanks for joining us. And later today, we're here until noon. From noon to 3, it's In This League with Bogman and the Welsh. And then from 3 to 6, Fantasy Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galina and George Kurtz. So there you go. So back to what we were talking about in relation to Kawhi and the Spurs. So that LaMarcus Aldridge thing, that story, when I read that, I remember, and then the Kawhi thing came out, it kind of leads back to your greater point. Like, is there a little bit of a crack in the foundation? Is this run over? People are always looking to end runs like that, you know, put a pin in it and say, remember that, you know, they want to write this story like Buster Olney wrote the last night of the Yankees dynasty. And he was right when the Yankees lost that game to the Diamondbacks in 01. He wrote a book called The Last Night of the Yankees Dynasty, and he ended up being right. I think people are going to jump to write books like that, like remember the Spurs dynasty, remember the New England dynasty, maybe before it's over. But that being said, that would be rough, right? If they lose Kawhi, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, now Kawhi's camp is talking about Lakers and Clippers and maybe wants to be in LA, but he also notes here that if Kawhi Leonard does become available in trade talks, the Celtics will be interested in probing the Spurs about a deal. They inquired about a trade prior to the February deadline. So Indiana had little interest in trading in Paul George trade with the Lakers, and that'll be the case for the Spurs too, because Boston gives the Spurs the best building blocks of assets, one of young forwards, likely Jaylen Brown, its own 18-19 protected Kings pick, and then Lonzo to the Spurs. But don't hold Lonzo to the Spurs. Don't hold your breath is basically what he's saying. So that's all Adrian from Wojnarowski's Twitter. The Celts have a ton of picks lined up here for the next few years. I was reading it earlier today. They got a bunch of protected picks from Memphis and Sacramento and the like. So there you go. I'll put that in your lap you can comment.
So I've got about seven teams on a list that I think have somewhat of a chance. We can start with Boston. The problem with the Boston thing is what Woj tweeted out. Who might have criticized Woj? The thing is, though, the money doesn't work. They have to move one of their bigger contracts if they're going to be bringing in Kawhi Leonard. It becomes tricky.
Yes.
Al Horford, I think, is far too important to be moved. There's just nobody on the roster that's going to give you anything near what Al Horford does.
By the way, this is important to what you're saying as well, because there's been LeBron James bandied about as well, but they would have to really upset the nature of the team, whether it's Kawhi or LeBron.
Well, so the thing then, right, is so it's one of those top three guys in Horford, Hayward, and Kyrie. As I just mentioned, right, you can't really replicate what Horford does. I just can't imagine Brad Stevens would be anything other than absolutely furious at seeing Gordon Hayward move. I feel like that is a reunion that the both of them are waiting on, and I feel like that would be a poor move. So then it comes down to Kyrie. The problem is, and we know this, and Kyrie, you know, we're talking about leaving money on the table. Kyrie said, I would be foolish to sign an extension and miss out on money. It makes no sense. So any team that were to trade for Kyrie Irving, if Kyrie Irving would traded for. At no team, no situation. Like, if the Lakers get Kawhi, right, they can get the guarantee that he will re-up. Nobody who trades for Kawhi will be, Kyrie rather, would be getting that. I threw out the idea the money works, actually, where Kyrie-Kawhi swap, and then you maybe throw in the Kings pick or something like that, just because you don't know what you're going to get from Kyrie. At least the Spurs competitive. Lord knows they need a point guard. The thing is, do you want to break up what you have in Boston? Because if you move Kyrie, it's not a one-for-one in terms of what they do in their starting lineup. Like, Terry Rozier then has to start at the point, and one of Brown, Tatum, and Hayward has to go to the bench. Odds are it would be.
Say that last part again, Kevin.
Well, what I was saying, that if they did a Kyrie for Kawhi swap, it's not one for one in terms of their starting lineup. Yeah. I mean, obviously you figure things out, but Rozier has to now be in your starting lineup, and one of Brown, Tatum, or Hayward has to hit the bench.
Right. So, all right. So I know you also sent over some odds. So let's go over that. I'll let you read them off.
I will pull those up. I mean, obviously the other big teams that are involved, right, are the two LA teams. I do think that the Clippers deserve a lot of consideration because they have the 12th pick and the 13th pick. Tobias Harris is a nice asset. And I do think we're at a point where Jerry West is kind of one of the guys that deserves consideration. The odds, though, for the Bovada Odds Sportsbook are: what team will Kawhi Leonard play for in his opener of the 2018-2019 season? And the Lakers are the heavy favorites, 5-7 odds. You've got the Celtics then coming in at second at 15-4. The 76ers and the Spurs are both at 5-1 odds. And then the Cavs and the Clippers are at 10-1.
Yeah, I'm seeing them right now. It's look, there's so much to dive in. The Spurs are at 5-1. Well, there's so much to dive into here. And again, this is a report. Like, Kyrie hasn't even talked to the Spurs about this, right? So this is his people floating it out there, or his people have talked to the Spurs. Kawhi has to have this discussion in order for it to be official, right? But the Spurs are also not in any rush to do this. They're just going to wait around and make sure that they get the best offer. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean before games are played. It can bleed into the season, which would be super dysfunctional maybe, but it doesn't have to be right away. In fact, most of the experts out there say that the Spurs aren't in a rush. They're not going to really do anything until this is a definitive, I'm not having it, I'm not playing for you guys long term, so just trade me. And field the best offer. That's really where it's going to be, right? So it's all a guessing game. I'm surprised the Lakers are such a prohibitive favorite, though. I wouldn't be on that bet.
It's twofold, right? The Lakers have the assets, and I think people are quickly, and I agree in terms of being cautious around it, is I think people are pretty much assuming that Kawhi is going to say, I will resign only with the Lakers. And I don't think that that's true. His camp already said that he maybe would be interested in going to New York. It seems as if he wants a big market, right? So that's why I put together what I felt were seven somewhat realistic. I had the Lakers, the Clippers, right? LA, the Knicks, that was mentioned. We know the Celtics would be involved, and we know the 76ers, of course, would be involved in those talks as well. I thought that the Miami Heat would be interesting. They have assets. It is a big market, and I do feel like Pat Riley must be unhappy to have not been able to kind of get in the free agent market pretty much since LeBron left. And then the seventh team was the Cavs. Look, it's not a big market. There was this report that the Grizzlies were looking to move Chandler Parsons' contract in the fourth pick for an established starter. Perhaps that could get you Kevin Love all of a sudden, the fourth and the eighth pick for Kawhi Leonard. Maybe that is a nice package that could be attractive to the Spurs. I mean, it's a risk that I don't know if the Cavs kind of would take. A part of me wants to take the Cavs out of all of this stuff because I actually really feel like they are going to sit on their hands and let LeBron walk. That's not even what we're talking about now. There is one team that I've seen their name sort of.
You said they are going to sit on their hands and let LeBron walk?
I think so.
Or they're not going to?
I think they are.
Oh, yeah.
There is one team that
the Heat, by the way, would be plus 2,000. So if you plunked a $50 down on that thing, you kind of like your chances there as a long shot. The Knicks are plus 800. Spurs plus 300. Lakers plus 175. Knicks plus 800. This is the first regular season game of 2018-19. What's interesting is, what if he didn't play? I guess it's whatever roster he's on, first regular season game. You know, like, what if he did some sort of weird holdout? Like, he was like, look, yeah, you guys didn't trade me, but I'm not reporting. You know, they just start finding him and it becomes a weird thing. It's hovering over it, but maybe they would. Maybe if they didn't feel like they got a requisite value, maybe the Spurs would be like, fine.
Oh,
you just stay, just sit at home and not play basketball. Like, which is basically what he did last year. Look, I can't argue against him because he said he was injured, but I think using your head, you can realize that Kawhi was upset that they rushed him back. He felt like he got re-injured and wanted to take some time off. But I think anybody could realize that Kawhi was probably good enough to play at some point during the season. You can't really speak for a player when he says he's injured, but his teammates certainly thought that. He felt he was just being attacked, but I think it was basically like Kawhi's like, you know what? I don't trust you guys. You messed with my career, and I'm not playing for this organization, which I think is off-putting because people think that the Spurs are one of the best organizations, that they wouldn't do that to a player, but he feels that they did. So how can you really argue with a guy if he feels that way?
Well,
he knows them more intimately than we do.
Well, that was kind of the thing when you mentioned it right there, right? That players on the team were saying they thought he could be back, notably Tony Parker and Ginobili. And anybody who's kind of been within the Spurs organization that kind of spoke on the situation was like, that's not Tony, that's not Manu, that's Pop talk. Anybody who's been around the Spurs organization knows that. That's what they were saying. And that applies to Kawhi, where he probably felt that. And I think that's really where they lost him. I think the injury stuff was frustrating, and I think that's why he refused to come back, and he wanted to leave things in his own hands. I think that's why we saw that. I think what led to this decision and this desire to get out of San Antonio, the quote was betrayal, which feels perhaps dramatic, but when you think about it, if in your eyes a team messed up your injury, you've now gone on to handle it, you're handling this in what your opinion is the best way possible, and you now have teammates who were supposed to have your back kind of leaning into you and clearly taking the side of the organization, and you feel like it comes from the head coach, yeah, there's probably no coming back from that. The one team I wanted to mention, though, some of those odds you were mentioning also came from Bet Online, right? So it was plus 2,000 for the Heat. A team that has better odds than them, the Sacramento Kings. Now, I don't really know how confident I would be to think that Kawhi Leonard would re-sign with the Sacramento Kings. It is in California. You take that. They have the number two pick, and it's the Sacramento Kings. Like, they have assets, and they're kind of crazy. And maybe they would get that done. Like, I can't rule that out. I think that's one of the things with this Kawhi situation that is very unique in terms of a player requesting a trade and kind of giving that preferred destination, right? Like when Melo said, I'm going to New York, kind of when Kyrie gave his list of teams, is I almost feel like teams aren't going to be as scared off that he's only going to be a Laker. Like if the 76ers feel like they're losing ground in perhaps the LeBron run, they'll say, you know what, give us Kawhi. We think that we're going to be able to bring him back in. I think that that's a fine thing for Philadelphia to. If the Celtics see a scenario where they can maybe bring Kawhi in for an adequate price, which, I mean, for them, right? Like, an adequate price is probably a fortune to other teams, but they just have so many assets, then maybe they do make that move and just test their luck at it and see if he does re-sign. So that's kind of one of the things that, to me, makes this way more unpredictable. And I agree with what you had mentioned of, I wouldn't be so gung-ho guaranteeing that this means he's going to be a Laker, because I don't think the rest of the league is going to be as scared off to trade for Kawhi.
Here's a question. And please understand the spirit in which it's asked, because I know how big a fan you are of one of the players that I'm about to throw this out. Kawhi is going to turn 27 in a couple of weeks. LeBron turns, his next birthday turns 34, right? if you are one of these teams that's giving up a whole bunch of assets to land one of them, which I think some teams would have to conceivably do like a LeBron sign and trade in order to make it work. Is that accurate?
I think like Houston
would have to. But wouldn't Philly conceivably have to do that as well? Or are they just going to have to offload some contracts to do that?
They may have to just move some contracts. I think at the end of the day, right, like you're trading for Kawhi, the LeBron stuff's like those signing trades. But for the spirit of the conversation, who would I rather
So let me ask the question. Mm-hmm. Would you rather rebuild your team right now around 27-year-old Kawhi or 33? I'll get his exact age. I know he's 33 right now. But let's see exactly when he turns 34.
Oh, December 30th. I told you that.
Right. Yeah, so he turns 34 in the middle of next season. So Kawhi's playing his 27th age season. LeBron basically playing his 34th age season. If you're rebuilding your team around it, is it Kawhi or is it LeBron? I'll let you answer it first because I have an answer for it as well.
I actually think it's fairly. I think it's LeBron, and I understand that there's a 7-year age difference. The problem is the durability is still not particularly close. Like this was not the first of a injury problem. LeBron is coming off playing the most minutes in the regular season, most minutes in the playoffs, and I guess that could be concerning, but there's just literally been zero signs of LeBron slowing down. And the one other thing, and I'm not saying that this is real, but here's what I know for a fact. Pop has made a lot of players look better than what they are. And I don't know if that will apply to Kawhi, but I know damn well that that does not apply to LeBron James. And I still know that if I had to choose, right, next year, Kawhi's not going to be better than LeBron. Probably not the year after that. So I know for a fact that at least the next 2 years, I'll have the better player in LeBron James. So I'm kind of then just hoping LeBron were to fall off if I were to take Kawhi. So for me, comfortably, I would still take LeBron James.
Well, I have two answers for this, and I'm going to try and squeeze in
two options
as well. I think ultimately... No, I think any team that's making this move is building towards a championship in the immediate future. So that's why I think you still go with LeBron. However, the question to you, what if it is the Lakers? Would the Lakers rather have Kawhi with a runway in front of him or LeBron with a short window and trying to stack a bunch of pieces around him, which they don't know what they are yet? It's obviously him and Lonzo, but that's probably not enough to get it done. So if you're the Lakers, do you shade to Kawhi because you need more runway to build pieces around him?
It's tough, right? Because I think the growing sentiment almost immediately was, oh, it's Kawhi and LeBron. Like, that's kind of the thing is if LeBron shows up there, and we can have this conversation another day because it is interesting to see. But if LeBron says, I'm going to LA, I would be floored if all of Kuzma, Ingram, and Lonzo remained on the
list. Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to have to move some pieces around him to make it more of an immediate winning situation, I think. We'll try to do some NBA draft stuff in the third hour since it's coming up next week, but we're going to move on to the World Cup and some NFL stuff in hour number two. So good NBA discussion there. We'll close it for now. It's Kevin and I back after the break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Join us to talk about the World Cup.